everybody. I'm Madeline Parra, and I'm your incoming executive director. Welcome to the first CCL National Call of 2022. We'll hear from our speaker in just a few minutes after just a few thoughts from me as we start the year. So I hope you're as glad as I am to be together going into a new year. And I also hope that despite the many complications of this holiday season, you had a chance to reflect on the things that mattered to you, to rest, and to connect with people you love. A lot of my own holiday plans were messed up this year by the complications of the pandemic and the weather. But one of my very favorite times was an hour spent with two of my longtime CCL buddies. The gift of their friendship just means so much to me. It's not uncommon, I think, in our CCL chapters that we make really deep friendships and they last through time and they're what hold us together. So I want to thank all of the longtime CCLers who've reached out through the challenges of the pandemic to draw in the newer folks that are coming to your chapters and draw them into your circles of friendship. I think of Garrett Pinnell. He's a group leader and a former state coordinator in Texas, and he's now a member of our IT staff. He did a breakout session on onboarding at our November conference, and he said, "My best friends, they started out as my new prospects." So that's a quote right out of the breakout recording. My best friends started as my new prospects. I just think that's such a sweet reward for the time that he spent welcoming new people to CCL. So we're together here today at a time when the pandemic is surging. We don't yet know the outcome of the budget reconciliation bill. And the anniversary of the January 6th violence in our Capitol is really fresh on our minds. In times like these, it's understandable to feel discouragement or despair. And I suspect that nearly everybody on this call battles with that at least sometimes. We can get help for that from each other. I see you do that for each other. We can get help from our resilience programs on CCL Community. And I especially want to plug the Active Hope workshops that Steve Levin offers. And of course, we work at practicing putting our attention on the victories that we do have and on our gratitude. I think too that some people find comfort or strength in their spirituality. And sometimes we just use like the power of decision that we have to keep taking action kind of no matter what we're feeling. I think at my own times of discouragement, I try to work on myself and sort of let go of the desire to have a feeling that I'm gonna know the outcome and just keep working to shift things in the right direction. Some days I'm more optimistic than other days, but every day, I just keep working on the problem. And every day I like doing it with you. That really helps. So after our speaker today, we'll have a congressional update from our government affairs staff. Jen Tyler, she's going to tell you that Build Back Better is not dead. And though it's an uphill battle to get a carbon price in it, our allies in the Senate have not given up. So that may fly in the face of our despair, but I want you to think about this. Members of Congress are realists. If or when they think that this path for carbon pricing is fully closed, they're gonna tell our staff and together we'll look for other paths. But since they haven't stopped trying behind closed doors, and since they tell us that they need us now to remind the president and the Senate that we're watching and that we want this action, I think we owe it to them to stay in action. And of course, we're gonna tell you how to do that later in the call. So one more thing before I introduce our speaker, and I am really excited about having Jose Aguto with us again. I just want to say that in addition to the gift of your time and friendship and your courage to stay in action, I want to thank you for the incredible financial gift giving that took place in December with our year-end appeal. You know, Lene Pettengill and her team, once again, they set an outrageous goal, our biggest goal ever, of $1.5 million. And though Lene was biting her nails through December, once again, you validated her faith and trust in you, and the progress bar went up steadily all month. And it did the kind of surge, that kind of surge we like, in the last 2 days of December. Together, you and your friends donated $1,580,672, and that put us in good shape for this new year. And I thank you so much for that. So our speaker today, Jose Aguto, he is a longtime friend and partner to CCL. We first got to know him as he was working with the Friends Committee on National Legislation, and then he moved over to the Catholic Climate Covenant, where he's now the executive director. it's not a coincidence that both the Friends Committee and the Catholic Climate Covenant have actively supported the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. He's also a veteran and a graduate of the Villanova Law School and someone who works tirelessly to bring people together. So Jose, welcome to the National Call. We're just so glad to have you.
Thank you so much, Madeline. It is an absolute honor to be with you. And thank you for your inspiring opening remarks, recognizing that the challenges that we are all facing during these times and seeking strength from one another and also from our faith, if we have one. And that is one of the reasons why I stepped into the faith realm of advocacy with the Friends Committee, and also as a cradle Catholic, ultimately with the Catholic Climate Covenant, that my faith and many people who share the same faith believe that we can overcome, that nothing is impossible with God, and that with the saving grace of each other and the saving grace of the testaments of our faith, we can carry on in difficult times. And it is a real testament to see many CCL folks who continue to persist and hope and see the good in people, even our enemies and our adversaries, and continue on with this good fight. So thank you for that. I first wanted to start with talking about the Catholic Church writ large. And I know that it gets some bad press and there's a lot of conflict within it, but there's so much more to the church. So many millions of Catholics who serve and live the gospel. And I really want to bring that dimension forward before we move into the more granular aspects of what the covenant does and how we advocate and how we work with CCL to promote just and climate action. So I'm going to do a little quick tour through some dimensions of our church, of the Catholic Church, both globally and the United States. And then move on to more granular aspects of the Catholic Climate Covenant in our work. So as an overarching matter, the Catholic Church is 1.3 billion people across the world. That's 16% of the population. And we fall under one aspect is the Nicene Creed, which was established in 381 AD. And one of the phrases which we repeat every Mass is that we believe that we are one holy Catholic and apostolic church. So while it may not seem like that sometimes to folks, we still strive as Catholics to be that way. And we are unified every day by the Mass. The readings in the gospel and the Eucharistic celebration are all the same in the hundreds of thousands of churches across the world every day celebrating the same Mass. And we are also under the leadership, as you know, of the Pope, who is currently Pope Francis. So there's a kind of a singular unity that's distinct in the Catholic Church that continues, and that we strive to hold that unity moving forward as a church. And in the United States, there are 70 million Catholics that fall under 193 dioceses, under which there is a bishop who runs those dioceses. And within them, within the U.S. Catholic Church, there are over 17,000 parishes, over 6,000 parochial schools, over 220 Catholic colleges and universities, Catholic healthcare systems, which serve one out of every six citizens in, or not citizens, Americans or people in the United States, hundreds of religious orders, thousands of charitable organizations. And I just want to note, because we have all seen, some of us have experienced the recent disasters in Arkansas, in Colorado, and some of my friends and family in the Philippines, that Catholic Charities USA is one of the largest social service providers in the United States, and Catholic Relief Services is one of the largest international provider of services in the world. And so I just want to bring a bit of understanding or appreciation of some of the work they do, and that this is also part of the Catholic Church. So I'm going to share my screen for a second here. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about, so Catholic Charities, for example, and when you look at what some of their priorities are, you see how many they do, affordable housing, immigration, food assistance. For example, in my diocese of Arlington, they are the largest provider of services to allow the Afghan refugees to come and integrate into our country. You see here during COVID in 2020 that Catholic Charities USA served over 15 million people. And then moving forward to the Catholic Relief Services, which is one of the largest international relief organizations in the world. 2017, for example, serving 12.4 million people in emergency response, and in agriculture, millions of people in 51 countries, and in health, 93 million people in 42 countries. And right now they're in the Philippines helping people who, over 140,000 families in the Philippines that are left homeless because of Super Typhoon Rai. So these are some of the dimensions that are also part of the Catholic Church. What brings us together also is what's called Catholic social teaching, where we proclaim, the Catholic Church proclaims that human life is sacred and the dignity of the human person is the foundation of a moral vision for society. And what that includes under those themes is care for creation, which is a requirement of our faith. It is a relatively new requirement, but it is indeed a requirement. And as Pope Francis said in Laudato Si, living our vocation to be protectors of God's handiwork is essential to a life of virtue. It is not an optional or a secondary aspect of our Christian experience. So to note that we as Catholics need to weave this into our faith as something that is elemental, fundamental to our faith. Now, this is relatively new. And so what the covenant is doing is trying to help weave care for creation into the life and ministries of our church. And we seek to do so, as many of you are familiar, through Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si. But we also know that many popes, three popes prior to him, have been making statements about our call to care for creation. And he is standing on the shoulders of those prior popes. And so we, the covenant, are charged in the United States with doing that weaving through education, facilitating, inspiring, organizing, galvanizing, advocating, many, many verbs to bring this with our partners in the United States, with our constituents, our tens of thousands of constituents, and through particular programs. For example, here, this is the covenant's front page, you'll see. We are working with the Vatican with regard to the implementation of the Vatican's Laudato Si Action Platform, which I'll talk about a little bit later. You see advocacy right here in this second box, where we were advocating for the Build Back Better bill, also making specific mention of the hope for carbon pricing. And we also have, for example, our Catholic Energies Program, where we work with Catholic institutions across the country to get solar onto their lands or onto their roofs. And so, for example, this was just recently shown in Yale's Climate Communication Center for Climate Communications. Our Catholic Energies Program put the largest solar array in Washington, D.C. on the lands of the Missionaries of Charity. That's St. Teresa of Calcutta's order. And they have a hospice in Northeast D.C. We were charged with installing that for Catholic Charities, and now Catholic Charities DC is now carbon neutral. Catholic Energies also has 16 parishes in the Diocese of Richmond who are putting solar on their roofs as well. And we're working across the country with other Catholic institutions. We also have a creation care teams, and over 400 creation care teams exist in parishes and religious orders across the country. And we're also doing some young adult mobilization, inspiring young adults who want to talk about climate action and want to talk about ecological conversion in prayer, word, and deed. And so that we can animate in a faith-filled way climate action and meeting both the spiritual needs as well as the advocacy needs of youth and young adults across the country. Lastly, from a non-advocacy perspective, I wanted to talk about the Laudato Si Action Platform. And this is an announcement by the Vatican 5 years or 6 years after the publication of Laudato Si, a desire to implement Laudato Si and the Integral Acrology across seven sectors of the Catholic, global Catholic Church, around seven goals, from prayer to word to deed, and to do so across in a seven-year journey. And we are blessed to be the U.S. implementers of the Laudato Si Action Platform. If you go and you will see this Laudato Si goals here. And so across seven sectors, they will seek to implement particular actions that will be set out by the Vatican in order to embark on this seven-year journey. So we, the covenant, are the implementers. Through our website, we are all part of God's planet, godsplanet.us. And you can see we are also doing so in these seven sectors, families, parishes, dioceses, et cetera. And I just want to briefly note, for example, it's very important that we engage with dioceses. And so you're seeing in the United States that there are dioceses that are stepping into the Vatican's initiative through their Laudato Si action plans, seeing here the Diocese of San Diego, the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., the Archdiocese of Atlanta, and we have approximately 20 other dioceses that are in process of doing this. So this is a very exciting initiative where we're seeking, again, to weave care for creation into the life and ministry of our church. Okay, so lastly, and thank you for your patience here, I want to talk about advocacy. We do so in ways that are familiar to many of you, in that we seek that of God in everyone, that we seek to build bridges and to work across the aisles and not to demonize and to raise up the shared dignity of all people so that we can have the solutions that we need. In our parlance, it would be loving thy neighbor. And indeed, even in the gospel, Jesus calling for us to love thy enemy, and knowing that this is exceptionally difficult during these times, that we must still continue to have the needles of our moral compass pointed in that direction if we are going to believe in durable and lasting peace and comity across our society. We do so in partnership with others. We also do so with our own constituents through what you're familiar with, the letter of engagement. I know you're all professionals about this, so you know about that, but two examples that I'll raise. We had a petition last year calling for the administration and Congress to support Build Back Better and all of those wonderful provisions. We worked with one of our partner organizations, the Ignatian Solidarity Network, and their constituents, who are composed of young adults, high schoolers, and college students. During their lobby day in November, they took the signatories of that letter and those petitions to their meetings with their legislators. So that was a beautiful partnership. The second partnership that I absolutely am excited to talk about is the one with your Catholic Action Team, CCL's Catholic Action Team, led by Steve Coleman and Andy Pinelli. And both Steve and Andy are also champions in the covenant space with creation care teams. I would say almost single-handedly, they were able to get three of our bishops from 2019 to recently in 2021, Bishop McElroy of San Diego, Bishop Stowe of Lexington, Kentucky, and then Bishop Wensky in Florida, at various ways to support carbon pricing explicitly, thus allowing us additional space to demonstrate that there is some support within the Catholic Church and within the Catholic hierarchy for carbon pricing. So absolutely delighted to have partnered with Steve and to have leveraged, and Andy, and to have leveraged their particular advocacy that they did on their own in partnership so that we could bring a larger Catholic voice into this space. Lastly, I'll say, and I only found this out recently because we have been continuing to try and work with our West Virginia constituents and others and some of our church leaders to promote not just carbon pricing, but Build Back Better at large. But in that exploration, I just wanted to share, and I shared this with Denny and Madeline, Denny Richter and Madeline, a couple weeks ago. Pope Francis in 2019 voiced support for carbon pricing. And if you can see the highlighted text here, So feel free to use this to say that at least at some point in 2019, that Pope Francis expressly supported carbon pricing, and feel free to use that in your advocacy. And so with that, I will close and thank you for your patience. And I apologize that I went over a bit.
Oh, no apologies needed, Jose. Thank you. It was so uplifting to hear about all the different things that the Catholic Climate Covenant is doing, and be reminded of the size and reach of the Catholic Church. And of course, we always love hearing about the collaboration that you've had with our Catholic Action Team. Flannery, what are you seeing in the Q&A?
All right. Our most upvoted question, our top question here says, the strongest opposition I hear to progress on climate comes sometimes from Christians, some of whom are members of Congress. And this volunteer is asking why you think that might be and what can we do to change that?
Well, let me start with an overarching context here. And I think maybe many people are already familiar with this, that fortunately or unfortunately, Americans, the strongest affiliation that they're centering on at this time is political, not faith. And so I think a lot of the calculations that many of us Americans, including politicians, do are based on their political affiliation or their economic interests and not their faith. That being said, and during these times, and Madeline, you made mention of this, and you know, the sober reality of January 6th and the divergent responses of our two major political parties, we're feeling compelled to really speak directly to the faith dimension that a politician is claiming to be a part of. And to do so in a good way, not in a judgmental way, but so just envisioning this in my head, because we are thinking about this very seriously with our faith partners, to be going to the Hill and hoping to speak with the legislators and to say, you know, if you are indeed a Catholic and we all share the same faith and the same principles, can we speak on that level? Can you make decisions, you know, based on what you understand from your faith? And in this way, it sort of moves aside the other calculations that may be in the vast basket of calculations, and that we're coming purely as fellow Christians or of other fellow faith traditions and those concepts, and that's really where we're getting to during these precarious times.
All right. Our next question is, are church leaders talking to elected officials to encourage them to take climate action?
Well, I know we are. I would say as an overarching matter, in my, we're a large church and we have different actors, advocating for different things. For example, Catholic Relief Services will be very active in international aid, and the same with Catholic Charities with regard to domestic aid and food and things like that. So I would say that we are working with church leaders to lift up this dimension of the suite of Catholic priorities. I would admit to saying that it is not a top priority for most of them. It is actually our job at the Covenant to lift up this dimension across the broad panoply of their legislative priorities.
This question is from Joanne. She says, my chapter doesn't have any active Catholic members. What would be the best way for us to connect our message with local Catholic leaders and congregations?
Well, I'd love to work with you directly and also my colleagues. as I mentioned, we have 400 creation care teams, and given the Vatican's huge lift to implementation, we're excited to launch and have incentivized Catholics across the country. So let's do some matching, some asset mapping on that, if that's okay.
All right. And Madeline, what time do we need to, how much time do we have for questions?
We have 2-3 more minutes. We're
okay.
Good.
Let's see. Okay, this question, says, well, first this questioner says, thank you, Jose, for all these important initiatives. And then they ask, are there interfaith efforts to promote these actions among leaders of other faiths? Can you speak to any interfaith stuff you're aware of?
With regard to the Vatican's Laudato Si Action Platform, or just generally speaking?
I think just in general on climate.
Okay, so we do work, I would say, from an interfaith perspective, on the advocacy level. I will admit on the program level, because this is such a heavy lift and the uptake is a small percentage of the Catholic Church right now, and given the vastness that I mentioned, for example, 16,000 parishes, that we are primarily focused on getting your Catholics in the pews to step into the programmatic dimensions. But from, again, from an advocacy perspective, we do work on an interfaith level.
Gotcha. Okay, so for our last question here, we'll take this one that says, could you provide some specific ways, we need the first part of the question. She says, the Catholic university where I work signed on to the Laudato Si Action Platform. Could you provide some specific ways we could partner with CCL to achieve some of the LSAP goals?
Partner with CCL on the colleges and universities. I'm not sure I can answer that question, but what I can say is that I'm just gonna do a quick share screen here first. Pardon me, that there is a tremendous initiative by Loyola University Chicago that was developed and adapted by the Vatican to get these colleges and Catholic colleges and universities into action. Here we go. And so if you want to go to our We Are God's Planet, this Laudato Si University Pathways is the gold standard for how universities will step into activity with regard to Laudato Si, and then probably there will be ways in which your CCL chapters can also be a part of that.
Great. Thank you, Jose.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Jose. And I look forward a great deal to us continuing to partner and work together and see what in our different orbits and ways and populations that we can keep moving things forward. So here's to tremendous success for the Catholic Climate Covenant in 2022. You're totally welcome to stay on for the rest of the call. You might be interested in the legislative update that Jen Tyler is about to give, but I just deeply appreciate you taking the time on the weekend to be with us. So thank you.
Thank you. A blessing to be with you all.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to welcome and introduce Jen Tyler, who's one of our directors of government affairs. She is a wonderful addition to our staff. She has years of experience on the Hill, particularly serving as staff to the Republican representative, John Katko. So Jen, help us understand what's going on. I know it's hard.
No, thanks. Thanks, Madeline. And I want to start with something that will hopefully allow a lot of us to take a collective exhale in saying that Build Back Better is not over with. I know there were some remarks before the holiday break about Senator Manchin being a no vote, but it's been confirmed it's not dead. And at the same time, I think that also might drive some of us a bit crazy, given how long this entire process has been, how hard you've all been working on it, that it's dragging out further. It's pretty exhausting and frustrating, and Congress has this uncanny ability to drag everything out and make it much more complicated than anyone thinks it should be. But even though we're not at the finish line, there's definitely been progress. Your calls, your emails, they're all making a big difference. So here's where things stand currently. We're entering a new round of negotiations. As I mentioned, Senator Manchin before the Christmas break said he was a no vote, but since then we've had confirmations from Leader Schumer, from the White House, and from Senator Manchin himself saying that negotiations on Build Back Better, on the reconciliation bill, are continuing. Leader Schumer even promised to bring the bill to the floor for a vote. So all signs are indicating that negotiations are continuing. Everyone is still working to reach a final agreement. I think even more promising than those remarks were the remarks that Senator Manchin made earlier this week. He said that the climate provisions were the least controversial and would be the easiest to reach an agreement on. I think that sounds like music to a lot of our ears. It's still unclear exactly what the points of discussion are in climate. So what are the specific policies that have been agreed to? What are some outstanding concerns that Senator Manchin and some others might have? We're not sure on, but it is clear that the climate provisions themselves are not dead. Turning to what we focus on mostly, the price on carbon, it's still uncertain how likely that is to be included. It's still an uphill battle, but we are hearing confirmed reports from our allies in the Senate that Senator Manchin has not closed the door on that. And I know our West Virginia folks are doing great outreach there. So all in all, we're hearing this reaffirmation that they're continuing to work on Build Back Better, but the question still remains, what's the timeline since it's being dragged out? And I want to take a step back and provide you with a little more of an overview of what Congress has going on. There's still a lot on their plates, the same as there was in December. The next couple of weeks, the Senate has committed to dedicating to voting rights. After that, they're going to have to deal with the president's budget. The State of the Union address is the first week in March, and then they'll have to fund the government once again. And this is all going to have to happen while COVID cases are at an all-time high on the Hill, like they are all around the country. Offices are trying to figure out, how do we go back to remote working? How do we have safe in-person voting for members of Congress in the House and the Senate? So this is all to say that the timeline on Build Back Better, but on a lot of things, remains very much in flux. Most likely, we're looking at a 2 to 3 month timeline before this all wraps up on Build Back Better and the reconciliation bill. So coming back to, what does this mean for us? What does this mean for CCL? Why are we doing another call to action right now? Like I said, overall, there's a lot of promising statements coming from key senators, including Senator Manchin, on the likelihood of getting these robust climate policies across the finish line. The battle for a price on carbon, it's still an uphill one, but our champions in the Senate, who have been fighting for this since day one, just like you all have, are going to continue fighting for a price until a deal is signed into law, and that's exactly what we're going to do. I also want everyone to take a moment to reflect on the victories we've had along the way. I know we all look at the final product, what's going to be in the bill in the long run, but we can't lose sight of what we're doing in this process. Getting nearly every senator in favor of a carbon price is no small feat. That's not something I think many people would have expected even a few months ago. So that's a huge, huge victory that we definitely have to keep in mind and take stock of and be very proud of. And I also want to remember that with or without a price, this bill is going to be the largest climate investment in our nation's history either way. So we have to keep the pressure up to make this across the finish line and to make it better. And specifically, why this call of action? Why are we focusing on the White House, Senate Democrats? Well, we've heard from our key allies in the Senate that the White House continues to be a bit of a weak spot on climate in Build Back Better negotiations. We're hearing that they definitely need more of a push in the right direction. They need to hear a little bit more from everyday folks about the importance of climate so that they are joining these conversations with a little more gusto behind their commitment to the climate provisions. So as negotiations start back up, we need to make sure the White House and Senate Democrats continue to hear your voices on the importance of climate action generally in this bill, getting that across the finish line, including a price on carbon. And lastly, I just want to say, I know Madeline mentioned some of this, but this has been such a long process, much longer than any of us anticipated. But I just want everyone to remember that the progress we're making shows how important your outreach has been. It's already paying off. So we should all be heartened in how much our work is already making a difference, how far we've already come. And we just need to keep it up to make sure that Congress gets this done.
Thank you so much, Jen. That is really, really helpful. Keep up the great work, guys, there in our TC team. So we're going to jump to our actions next. If you have questions from what Jen was talking about, we're not going to take them now. I'm going to ask you to put them in the forums and community as we always do with our questions, because that way lots and lots of people can see them. So as Jen said, for the next 1 to 3 months, or for however long it takes, budget reconciliation is our top priority. And you know, whatever you personally think the odds of our success are, it's our job to increase those odds if we possibly can. So turn out all the emails to Biden and also the Democratic senators that you can this month, and keep using cclusa.org/take-action. That should be familiar by now. And I suggest that as you're doing that, in particular with as you're asking your friends and family or sympathetic organizations to join us in this action, give them the heads up that you might ask them to do it again as events unfold in DC. Right now, we're letting Biden and the politicians know that we haven't gone away. In a month or two, we might need to say more to them based on the content of their negotiations. So we're going to keep putting everything we have into mobilizing. When you go to cclusa.org/take-action, you'll see the progress bar. You'll see that we are 3/4 of the way to the initial goal that we set of 10,000 contacts. That is totally fantastic. And I want us to blow past that 10,000 really quickly. And then I want us to keep going. Let's just call it an unstoppable surge. Can we get to twice that number? Just keep going, folks. All right, so I don't notice how many there are on a call, but on the call right now, but there's generally more than 1,000. I invite you to queue up cclusa.org/take-action if you haven't done this already. And then as soon as the call is over, you can send out your emails yourself. So that's the first action for January. The second action sets the stage for your work for the rest of the year. So you're starting it this month, but it's something you'll keep coming back to. We've identified 3 big priority actions to keep coming back to throughout 2022. The first one is to make your group stronger by being an oasis in the storm to everybody who comes. As we've been saying, we need each other. We need our friendships in order to stay afloat in these challenging times. So try not to let your urgency to get to the actions squeeze out the time for people to connect. Even a little bit of time spent checking in with each other at every meeting, it heartens us to stay in action instead of maybe hiding under the covers. All right, the second priority action for the year is focused on community education and outreach. Last year, you did a super job with op-eds, blowing past all previous years. I'd like to see 2022 be a year that we do that with presentations, whether they're virtual or in person, however you need to do them. We have a really fantastic presenters action team, and we're also going to be providing more staff support for this. And the goal of your presentations should be to tell stories that move more people in your community to action, which I think means helping them see both what's been done already and how and what more is needed and how they can help. We want the politicians then to see a growing demand for action during this election year because of that work. And that speaks to the third priority action. It's all about the elections. So going back to Mission Impossible, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to use every lever of political will you have this year and repeatedly get the message to all candidates running for Congress or locally that the voters want more action on climate change. And you don't even have to be that specific about what solutions you want. We'll work with Congress on that through our lobby lever. Simply make it clear as the campaigns ramp up that lots of voters want more climate action from Congress. So here's a way to think of the year. Think of it like a gardener. You're bringing budget reconciliation to harvest by giving your nearly full-grown plant, AKA the Build Back Better Act, a great deal of your attention, for as long as it takes for that fruit to ripen up. And you're simultaneously building up the fertility of the soil through your presentations and engagement with all candidates so that the next Congress can grow a good crop of climate legislation. And make lots of friends, of course, while you tend your climate gardens. Lastly, I'm gonna tell you real quick about 3 upcoming conferences. If you're a conservative, we have an event for you on March 29th to 30th. We are organizing a conservative climate leadership conference in person in Washington, DC. It's an event only for conservatives. We're lining up Republican members of Congress as speakers, people like Representative Curtis, we hopefully Senator Murkowski, as well as leaders from eco-rights organizations to facilitate conservatives coming together to move powerfully on climate. So we're making invitations now, and you'll see on the landing page for the event, as people get actually signed on. With members of Congress, it's hard to get them to commit early, but we are very encouraged about who we think we'll be able to get. Whatever does or doesn't happen via budget reconciliation, we know we're gonna need all the political parties fully engaged on the problem. So this conference is our way of saying CCL never stopped doing conservative outreach during budget reconciliation, but if you thought we did, well, then we're back. Now, just briefly, if you're a liberal-leaning member, please support the event by helping conservatives you know to get there, but please don't try to come yourself. This event is so that conservatives can be 100% themselves while they're there and support each other, and there is an application process. You can get the details at cclusa.org/conservativeconference. That one doesn't have a hyphen. cclusa.org/conservativeconference. The next conference is for each and every one of you. Our June National Conference will be in person in Washington, DC, June 12th to 14th. We expect to open registration in February. And yes, it will be possible to participate remotely, but if you can find a way to come in person and it's safe for you, we promise to knock your socks off. We're taking a fresh look at everything about the conference so that you come away when you go back home connected, informed, and empowered. I'll just also mention that Mark Reynolds will be there and we'll be loving him up in some way. So in my mind, that's another reason to come if you can. Our diversity and inclusion team is also inspired and will be organizing a virtual conference in September. And I plan to be at that whenever it is. A couple of quick numbers for you. In 2021, supporters used our online action tools to write, call, tweet, and submit LTEs 215,120 times. 28,853 calls were made via the monthly calling campaign. And CCL Community became our most visited website with just over 2 million page views. And you used it. You went to it so many times to support your action. You used it to take 3,674,086 discrete actions like posting on forums, downloading resources, and RSVPing to events. So that ends our call. Before you go on to your group meeting or the rest of your weekend, please go to cclusa.org/take-action and send those emails to President Biden and your senators, or ask somebody in your household to do it if you already have. I've done it. It was easy. Thank you.
CCLers, are you tired? Of course you are. You've been sprinting for 13 years. And this year, we have the audacity to ask you to pick up the pace, to hold this man to his promise.
The United States sets out on the road to cut greenhouse gases in half by the end of this decade.
And you didn't disappoint. You showed grit, the kind of grit that won't go down without a fight, that won't give up, let up, or shut up until their goal is achieved. We look at you in awe, and above all, gratitude. Gratitude for your listening ears, for your perceptive hearts. Gratitude for your focus, for your dedication, your preparation, your grit. We are grateful for you and the banner year we've created together. Now, let's go make another one.